Okay, so this is Bio 160, and it's April 12th, Wednesday, and we're finishing up the cardiovascular system, and then you got a quiz on cardiovascular system a little bit later today. Okay, so does anybody have any questions right now? I think we're done talking about the heart and regulation of the heart, and so let's say just a few things about some blood vessels. So, first, some general features about blood vessels. All blood vessels are kind of similar in a lot of respects, and they're different in some, but if you were to think of a blood vessel, there are generally three different kinds. And you're going to find them in different parts of your body. And one of the kinds is an artery. What's another kind? A vein. Okay, and then there's something in between, an artery and a vein, and that's what we call a capillary. And so there's a pretty big difference between an artery, a capillary, and a vein, and we're going to just look at some of the general differences between these different kinds of tubes. And so in your book, it's got a really good picture that shows these things, and the best way to see it is by understanding the names of the layers that make up a blood vessel. All right, so every kind of blood vessel has three different layers. The tunica externa, that's connective tissue. Externa means what? On the outside of a blood vessel. And then there's a middle layer, the tunica media. It has some smooth muscle and some elastic tissue. And smooth muscle can constrict or it can relax. When it constricts, it causes vasoconstriction. And when it relaxes, it causes vasodilation of that blood vessel. And then the very last layer is what we call the tunica intima. It's made out of an endothelium, and it's just a very simple single layer of cells. So let me show you what these things look like so you can get an appreciation. All right, this is not an exam figure. You don't have to label all of these things, but it's still instructive to look at. The vessel on the left over here is an artery, and the vessel on the right is a vein. Just by looking at it, can you tell which one is the vessel wall much thicker? Yeah, the artery is much thicker, okay? And it has much more muscle, has more connective tissue, and that has to do with the kind of pressure that it contains. So you could probably guess which vessel has higher pressure. Is it going to be an artery or is it going to be a vein? Just by looking at the numbers of layers and the thickness of the layers. The artery is going to have higher pressures because it's built to be able to withstand much higher pressures. The walls are thicker, right? So it can hold on to the pressure without busting open or bulging out. All right, so here you can see the tunica externa, the connective tissue, the tunica media, which is the muscle layer. And in arteries, you see that that muscle layer is a lot thicker than on the vein over here. Then another connective tissue layer making up the tunica media. And then lastly, the inner layer, which is the endothelium, the tunica intima. And what does that look like to you? Can you remember when we were looking at tissues, could you describe that kind of cell right there? I'm seeing people saying squamous. I'm reading lips. I see squamous, I think. Yeah, I see squamous cells because they're really flat. Now, is that a stratified squamous or is that a simple squamous? Yeah, I hear a lot of that is simple. Simple means just one layer, right? It's just one layer. So there's just one cell going from the lumen of this artery to something deeper inside that vessel. So that's just a simple squamous endothelium that lines that particular blood vessel. And all blood vessels, regardless if it's an artery or a vein, have that endothelium, which is just a simple squamous, just one cell layer thick. That's the tunica intima. And even inside your heart, there's a lining of the inside of the heart, and that's called the endocardium. Did you have to learn endocardium? Yeah, I think so. Right, that's just a simple squamous endocardium, and it's really smooth and slippery, so it allows blood to flow through the heart or through these blood vessels without forming clots. Okay. So the big difference between an artery and a vein, artery has much more connective tissue and muscle compared to a vein. But now here's another difference. You notice that the vein has some structures inside the lumen of the blood vessel. Look at these flaps right here, made out of endothelium. They actually are valves. So you don't have valves inside arteries, but you do have them inside veins. Because the pressure is so low inside these veins that blood would squish around back and forth, sometimes toward the heart, sometimes away from the heart. But these valves right here make sure blood only goes in one direction, namely this direction back to the heart. And when blood starts to flow back, it gets trapped by these valves right here and it gets prevented from flowing. And those valves are made out of that endothelium. And I tell you what, if you have ever watched anybody exercise and they're relatively thin, you can see the veins in their arm pop out. Right? Have you ever seen anybody with their veins pop out when they're lifting weights or something? And if you look at that vein every once in a while, right, you'll see like a little bulge, a little berry, a little bump right there, and another bump right there, and another bump right there. Guess what those little bumps are? Those are the valves that are kind of pooching out because blood is trying to squish back down to your periphery, but those valves make it go only back to the heart. Okay? So those are valves that you can actually see. Okay, so that's a big difference between arteries and veins, namely the pressure. Which one has the lowest pressure? The vein, right here. And you can tell just by the structure because it's much thinner, doesn't have as much muscle, etc. All right, so that's, we look at the two kinds of vessels, and then the third kind, what was that third kind? A capillary. Okay, here's what a capillary looks like. All right, I said that all blood vessels have all these layers, but you know what? But not a capillary. Here's a capillary right here. And what do you see on this capillary? Yeah, I just see a simple squamous endothelium. So a capillary is minus the tunica externa, minus the tunica media, and it is only the tunica intima, or that endothelium. So which blood vessel is the thinnest of these three? Artery, vein, or capillary? The capillary, yeah, is by far the thinnest. And that's what gives a capillary its particular function. It's only at the capillary where things can leave the blood or can enter the blood. And why is that? Well, it has to do only with the thickness of the blood vessel. The artery and the vein are way too thick to allow material to translocate across the vessel wall. But the capillary is so thin that things can actually diffuse across the cell, or they can even leak out between spaces of the cell. So capillaries are real important because it allows for a process that we call exchange. So you might want to write that down. Capillaries are the site of exchange. That's where exchange takes place. So for instance, in your lungs, you're going to be secreting or excreting carbon dioxide from your body, and you're going to be absorbing oxygen. That can happen in only one kind of blood vessel. Guess what kind of blood vessels you have in your lungs that allow you to absorb oxygen and excrete carbon dioxide? Yeah, it's going to be this thin one right here. All right, arteries are going to take blood to the lungs. Veins are going to take blood away from the lungs, but inside the lungs where there is exchange taking place, it's got to be this capillary right here. If there's only arteries and veins, nothing could get in or out, and that wouldn't help you at all. Okay, so that's the important part of all these different structures. And remember, it's only the veins that have these valves in them. The heart has valves, but in terms of blood vessels, only the veins have valves. All right, so should I ask one more time? Yeah, one more time. Which kind of vessel allows for exchange? Capillary. And why is that? Because it's thin. It's real thin. Right? And that's really the only big reason, because that capillary is so thin. Okay. Let's look at a graph. Oh, I guess I have one other slide. I'm going to get to that graph in just a second. Here's another slide. Here we have a vessel. And we see it has this, what is this thing right here? That's a valve. so that when pressure is high over here and low here, right, so fluid will always move from high to low, just like diffusion, okay? So blood is going to flow in this direction, and look what happens to this valve. It opens up. These little leaflets open up. But now, if it's high pressure here and low here, which way is blood going to want to go? It's going to want to go backwards, but in this particular case, can it go backwards? No, because of that valve right there in that particular vein. Okay. Now, if somebody has cardiovascular disease, for instance, maybe the diameter of this vein has expanded so much that these valves, okay, when they come together, if they can't touch each other, if they're too far apart, then it's no longer what anymore? It's no longer a valve, and blood can go from one side of the valve to the other, back and forth, back and forth. And that's what happens, for instance, with varicose veins. When somebody has really enlarged veins in their body, then blood doesn't get back to your heart, and it has a tendency to get stuck in those veins, and that can cause problems like blood clotting disorders and things like that. Okay? And that's a result of when these valves get damaged. Okay? And these valves, where do you find these valves again? What kind of blood vessel? In veins. Yeah. Okay? And so varicose veins are veins that you see right underneath somebody's skin, but you can have also veins that are very deep in your legs. And if those valves get damaged in veins that are deep inside your legs, that's called deep venous thrombosis, or that's a very bad disease to have because that can cause stroke or heart attacks or whatever. Okay. So here's a graph that shows a bunch of different kinds of vessel types. You've got arteries over here, and you got capillaries right in the middle, and then you got veins, and then you got some intermediate-sized veins and intermediate-sized arteries right here. And this is plotted, right? This is a plot of different blood vessels versus the pressure that you have inside those blood vessels. So the fluid will always flow from what direction to what direction? Always from high to low. So if blood is going to flow from an artery into a vein, which one has to have the high pressure? The artery's got to have the high pressure. And which one has got to have the low pressure? The vein has got to have the low pressure, just by thinking about it. And if we look at this graph right here, guess what? That's what we see. Right? So the aorta has really high pressure on the order from about 120 millimeters of mercury down to 80, depending on whether the heart is contracting during systole or if the heart is relaxed during diastole. Right, so there's a pulsatile pressure in the aorta and pulsatile flow. That means it comes and goes, but it never goes to zero. And that is what? Is that higher compared to capillaries or lower? It's higher, right? So pressure is always going to be higher in an artery than a capillary. So blood then has to flow from arteries into capillaries. And what about the pressure between a capillary and a vein right over here? Which one is higher? Ah, people said a vein. Let's look at that again. Okay, well, what was my question? Which is higher, right? Yeah, the capillary is higher pressure because blood is going to have to flow from a capillary into a vein to get back to the heart. So the pressure has to be higher in a capillary. That's not the highest pressure, but it's got to be higher than a vein. So don't forget, blood always flows from high to low. So what this graph shows is that arteries have high pressure, capillaries have intermediate pressure, and veins have the lowest pressure so that it gets back to your heart. And so it just circulates like that. So a lot of times that turns out to be a trick question on tests. And for some reason, most people have a tendency to think if somebody asks the following question, what vessel has the lowest pressure? A lot of people have a tendency just to say, oh, the capillary has the lowest pressure. The capillaries are real important because that's where exchange takes place, but not because it's the lowest pressure, right? What kind of vessel has the lowest pressure again? The veins? Yep, vena cava in particular on this diagram right here. That's a vein. But which one of these vessels does exchange take place? A capillary right? But that's not due to the pressure, that's just due to the structure of the blood vessel. That's the thinnest blood vessel that allows things to go in and out. All right, so those are those three kinds of blood vessels. And you know what? Usually, well, when you look at a circulatory system, you've got what? The heart, and then what's the name of a vessel that takes blood away from the heart? Okay, as opposed to a name of a vessel, just a general name, not specific name, but a general name of a vessel that brings blood back to the heart. Taking blood away from the heart is an artery. Artery. And a vessel that brings blood back to the heart is a vein. Okay, and it really does not matter what that blood is carrying. It could be carrying oxygenated blood or deoxygenated blood. It doesn't matter. It's only the direction of the flow. So an artery always takes blood away from the heart, and a vein always brings blood back. And then what the heck do you have in between? You got those capillaries. And we call that a capillary bed because it's a network of capillaries. Right? Yeah, so that's a network of capillaries. So that's a typical kind of circulatory pattern that we see. Artery, a capillary bed, and then a vein, bringing blood back to the heart. Okay. So that's type of blood vessels. Okay. Which ones have the highest or lowest pressure? 7, 8. Okay, so now we're going to actually look at the names of some blood vessels that we have right here. All right, so I think I'm just going to show you some pictures. Okay, in your body, there are two circulations. And I got to find the picture with the circulations. I lost the picture. Okay. So how many sides does a heart have? It's got how many chambers? It's got four chambers. It's got two atria and two ventricles. So another way of thinking about the heart is that one atrium and one ventricle form one side of the heart, and then the other atrium and other ventricle form the other side of the heart. So you could divide the heart up not only into atria and ventricles, but into the right side and the left side. And as a matter of fact, that might be a better way of doing it. So the circulatory system is made up of two circulations. There's one pulmonary circulation and one systemic circulation. So let's see where those are, especially with respect to the heart. Okay, so here you have your heart, and here is the left side of the heart. The left ventricle is going to pump blood into the aorta. That pumps blood to what we call the systemic circulation. That delivers blood to almost every place in your body. And the color of this blood right here is red, meaning that it is oxygenated. So it's carrying oxygen and nutrients everywhere. And all the tissues in your body need oxygen to stay alive, to make ATP. So here is an artery. What's the pressure in this vessel right here? It's high, right? And can exchange take place? No, can't, because this artery is way too thick. All right, then it goes to different places in your body, like your brain or muscles. It goes everywhere, and it gets into a capillary. And what's the thickness of a capillary? It's real thin. So what happens in a capillary? Exchange. And what's the pressure like inside this capillary? Is it the lowest or the highest, or is it like in the middle? Yeah, it's intermediate pressure, right? So because that capillary is so thin, oxygen can leave the blood and nourish the tissues. The tissues are producing CO2, but that's going to be absorbed by the blood in the capillary because it's exchange taking place. And then the blood is going to come back to the heart. It's going to be minus some oxygen, but it's going to be picking up carbon dioxide. So here's a vessel bringing blood to the heart. What do we call a blood vessel that brings blood back to the heart. That's a vein. Okay? And how thick is a vein? Is it the thinnest kind? No, it's not. It still has those three different layers, so exchange cannot take place in a vein. But what about the pressure? It's low. Right? So blood will flow from high to low because that's the pressure in this particular system right here. And it's going to come back to the right side of the heart. Now, since this doesn't have oxygen, before it goes back to the tissues, it's got to pick up oxygen. Where is a place where blood gets oxygen from? The lungs. So the right side of the heart pumps blood to the lungs, which is over here. But instead of calling that the lung circulation, we call that the pulmonary circulation. So pulmonary and lung are exactly the same thing. So here is a vessel taking blood away from the heart. What do we call a vessel taking blood away from the heart? That's an artery. But here is an artery that has what? Deoxygenated blood. Right? So that's confusing to a lot of students when they first start looking at this thing. But remember that this blood, even though it's an artery, has deoxygenated blood because it's going to the lungs to pick up oxygen. And that the only definition for an artery is what? Taking blood away from the heart, not the stuff that's inside the blood. So it goes to the lungs right here. There are capillaries in the blood, in the lungs. And what do those capillaries allow for? Exchange, because capillaries are really thin. So CO2 will leave and oxygen will go into the blood. So here is a vessel bringing blood back to the heart. What do we call a vessel that brings blood back to the heart? It's a vein. Even though it has oxygen, because it's coming from the lungs, it has oxygen, it's oxygenated. This is what we call the pulmonary vein. It brings it to the left side of the heart, which then starts all over again. All right, so these are the circulations, the two kind of circulations that you have in your body, the systemic circulation and the pulmonary circulation, and that's why you have two sides of the heart. One is pumping. Which side of the heart is pumping to the systemic circulation? Oh, it's confusing to put it this way, but that's good if you can see it. The left side. Yeah, the left side of the heart is pumping blood to the systemic circulation. Okay? And what side of the heart is pumping blood to the lungs? The right side. Actually, I like it. It's good they put pulmonary over here because it's on the right side. Right, that matches up with the right side of the heart right there. Okay, so those are the two circulations. Now, what about the names of some blood vessels? Okay, you got to look at some names of blood vessels. Here's some blood vessels. I think this is an exam figure, maybe. This one right here. So here you can see your heart. And okay, so here is the aorta. This is going to supply the systemic circulation. So here is the aorta. And here's the ascending part, here's the arch of the aorta, and you can see that the aorta then starts to curve inferiorly, or down toward your feet. So this is what we call the descending aorta. So ascending arch and descending aorta. And on the arch, there are some blood vessels that come off the arch of the aorta. The first branch right here is called the brachiocephalic. Brachio means to the arm, because that's where your brachium is, and cephalic means toward your head. So brachiocephalic, it goes to two of those places. This next branch right here is the left common carotid, and then the third branch is the subclavian. So the subclavian takes blood to your arm, the common carotid takes blood to your heart, and as a matter of fact, the brachiocephalic bifurcates very early on into a subclavian artery on the right side of your body and a common carotid. And then as that subclavian gets into your body, in this region right here, underneath your armpit, that's called the axillary. So it's the exact same vessel, we just give it a different name. Sort of to make it, I guess, confusing a little bit. I'm not sure why that is. But if you drive on Lincoln Street and you drive down to the 605, what do they do to you? They change the name of the street. It's no longer Lincoln. What do they call it? They like Carson over there. All right, so that's just a fact of life. People change the names of streets and blood vessels just by changing its location in the body, okay? All right, so here is the axillary artery. And then when it gets into your arm, it's no longer the axillary. It's called the brachial. So here's brachial. And then when it gets into your forearm, it's actually easy to appreciate because remember you have two bones in your forearm. What are those two bones? You've got a radius and the ulna, and the radius is lateral. So the blood vessel that's lateral is called the radial artery, and the, thumbs up radius. It's a good one. Okay? And then on the medial side, that's called the ulnar artery. And you know what? People use that radial artery all the time because what do we use that radial artery for? It's very superficial by your wrist, and you can actually feel your pulse in that radial artery. So we call that a radial pulse sometimes. So if you're ever wondering why that's called the radial pulse, is because that's the name of that blood vessel going by the radius bone, and so that's the radial pulse. Okay. So that's the aorta. The aorta then branches into two. It's called the common iliac arteries. And then the iliac bifurcates into an internal and an external. And then the external, when it gets into your thigh, we call that the femoral artery. And then that becomes the popliteal when it gets behind your knee. And then when it gets down to your leg, don't forget your leg has two bones, a tibia and fibula. And then, okay, we call that the tibial artery or the fibular artery, depending on what side of the body it's on. All right, so I guess I don't make too big a deal of blood vessels on your test, but there's an important blood vessel. Okay, this first branch coming off the heart, which we call the brachiocephalic right here, bifurcates into the common carotid and the subclavian. I think we have that right over here. So if we look at this diagram, we can see the brachiocephalic, which is the first branch, the first blood vessel coming off the aorta. And it bifurcates very early on to the subclavian. Where does the subclavian go? It goes over into your arm, right? It becomes the axillary and then the brachial, right? All right. This one right here goes up to your brain. It's called the common carotid. And it bifurcates into an external carotid, which feeds the outside of your head, outside your skull. And then there's a branch that feeds your brain that deviates inside, and we call that the internal carotid. And right in this region right here is where you have those baroreceptors that measure blood pressure. And this thing right here, this enlargement of the internal carotid artery where those baroreceptors are, we call that the carotid sinus. That's a real important part of your cardiovascular system because it's prone to becoming diseased. It's prone to forming plaques and to misbehaving. And when it narrows, guess what happens to the blood supply to your brain when this carotid sinus narrows, when it forms a plaque, or maybe it can even go into a spasm because of a muscle inside that wall? Guess what happens to blood flow to your brain when there's a problem here in the carotid sinus? It decreases, right? And whenever you have decreased blood flow to your brain, what happens? It's bad. You get real dinging, right? You might even pass out if it's severe enough. And those little transient attacks we call transient ischemic attacks or TIAs, where somebody might lose consciousness, where they might be sitting up, but they won't know where they are, or who they are, or what's around them. And it's due to pathology in this carotid sinus right here. And that's probably one of the areas that gets investigated with ultrasound the most compared to any other spot in your body, because with ultrasound they can image this vessel, take a look at what it looks like on the inside without cutting anybody open. And even with MRI equipment, you can take pictures, but of course MRI is much more expensive than just ultrasound. Okay. So that's why they're looking with ultrasound in people's necks all the time, is to look at that carotid sinus. And if you have disease on one side, you might not have disease on the other, but most of the time if one carotid sinus has disease, there's some disease on the other side as well. Okay, so if you have cardiovascular disease or diabetes, what's the best treatment? Or a hypertension, if you have high blood pressure, the best treatment is diet and exercise. Just exactly what I don't want to hear. Okay. Okay, so that's the carotid. There's maybe one last thing that I want to talk about. Okay, so here's the usual circulation inside somebody. You got what? You got an artery, you got a capillary, and then a vein bringing blood back to the heart. Well, there's something that regulates the amount of blood that can get into this capillary right here. At the beginning of every capillary bed, there's something called a pre-capillary sphincter. And a sphincter is just a round, circular, smooth muscle. It's a band of smooth muscle. And this smooth muscle can constrict or it can relax. It can contract or it can relax. And when it contracts, guess what happens to the diameter of that blood vessel right there? When it contracts, you get something called vasoconstriction. It clamps down on this tube right here, and when it relaxes, you get something called what? Vasodilation. All right. When it vasoconstricts, it shuts off blood to the capillary, and when it dilates, it allows blood to go to that capillary. And so these pre-capillary sphincters are very important because you don't need to have blood going through a capillary all the time unless that particular tissue needs it. For instance, I haven't had lunch right now since yesterday, and as a matter of fact, I didn't have breakfast either, all right? So I'm probably grumpy. But anyway, I'm in a fasted state. So do I need to have a lot of blood going to my intestines to absorb food and digest food? Nope, you don't, right? So all those capillaries in my intestines, and especially the pre-capillary sphincters right here, are what? Vasoconstricted, because blood doesn't need to go through over there. But I'm still sitting up, I'm walking around, I'm writing. What about muscles? These muscles are working a little bit. Humor me, they're working, right? I'm exercising, okay? So blood needs to go to these muscles to give them oxygen and nutrients to make ATP. So what about the pre-capillary sphincters to my muscles right now? They are what? They're dilated, allowing blood to get to muscles because they're exercising. Now what would happen the opposite? Say I have dinner tonight and then I go lie down right away and fall asleep. What's going to happen to the capillaries in my muscles, the pre-capillary sphincters? Are they going to dilate or constrict? They're going to constrict because the muscles aren't working. And what about the pre-capillary sphincters to my digestive tract? They're going to dilate and let blood go there to absorb those nutrients, right, for digestion. And as a matter of fact, you don't have enough blood in your body for blood to go everywhere at one time. If all of your pre-capillary sphincters dilated at one time, you would pass out because you don't have enough blood to go everywhere. Your body has to pick where blood is going to go depending on the particular activity that you're going through. So remember what your mom used to say, right? After you had lunch, could you go swimming right after lunch? No, you could. You never got cramps. That's amazing. Okay. And the reason why that was, your mom was right, because after a meal, you have all this blood going to your digestive system to digest food. So there's really not enough blood to go to the muscles. If you started exercising and swimming, guess what's going to happen to a muscle if it doesn't have enough blood? It's going to cramp, right? And if your head is underwater, or if you're in water in a swimming pool and you can't use any muscles to stay afloat, then that's potentially really bad, right? Then you're going to drown. So exercising right after a meal is always a poor choice, and it could be lethal depending on the activity that you're doing, right? Appendix? Can it cause an appendicitis? Usually, no, it's not due to that. You know, I'm not sure if anybody really knows when somebody gets an appendicitis. It just happens. But your appendix is just part of your digestive system that gets filled up with food and it can't get out. So could it be triggered or precipitated by exercise after a meal? You know, that's an interesting hypothesis. I don't know. Eat bananas before you do what? Before you work out. Okay. Because there's a high level of potassium in bananas. Okay, but you have to eat the banana. You can't smoke the banana. I think that's a wives' tale, but it might be true. Yeah, that, oh yeah? Okay. Okay, so that helps with electrolyte balance. All right, so that's something about these pre-capillary sphincters right here. So I think I'm done talking about the cardiovascular system. What are the two phases of the heart cycle? Did we talk about that? We did, good. Systole and diastole. Which one is contraction? Systole. And you know all the different chambers of the heart? Blood vessels coming off the heart, the valves of the heart. Okay. All right. Well, let's work on some of these things at the end of the chapter right here. The study guide. Let's see what we can say about this stuff. Oh, wrong one. That's lymphatic. All right, question number one. How many chambers does the heart have? Four, right? Right ventricle, right atrium, left atrium. Okay. How many valves does the heart have?
Four.
Right? And so make sure you can identify them. Of the valves, you have two atrioventricular, between an atrium and a ventricle. What's the name of the valve on the right side of the heart called? Tricuspid. Tricuspid is on the right side, and on the left side it is the bicuspid or mitral valve. Okay. What's the purpose of an atrioventricular valve? Yep, stops the backflow of blood, but from where to where? How should blood flow first? Atria to ventricle. You don't want blood going from ventricle to atria, and that's what that valve prevents. It prevents blood flow from a ventricle back up into an atrium. What's the purpose of a semilunar valve? Yeah, let's think about where that semilunar valve is. The semilunar valve is between the ventricle and an artery. For instance, like an aorta or pulmonary artery. So it prevents blood from flowing from an artery back into the heart, into a ventricle. That's the job of a semilunar valve. All right, where do you find the ventricular and atrial septa? A septum, like this is your nasal septum right here. It's separating your nasal cavity into right and left parts. The septum of the heart separates the ventricles into a right ventricle and left ventricle. The atrial septum separates the atria into a right atrium and left atrium. So it's the wall between the ventricles or the wall between the atria. What are the three layers of the heart? And know what they are. The three layers are the epicardium, myocardium, and endocardium. And the endocardium is the inner lining, just like the endothelium is the inner lining of a blood vessel. And the epicardium is the outer lining. And what part, what layer of the heart is the one that contracts? The myocardium is the muscle part. Yeah. So what is systole and diastole? Systole is heart contraction. Diastole is heart relaxation. Okay, what is the systemic circulation? Yeah, it's the whole body. It consists of an artery, a capillary bed, and a vein. And it comes from the left ventricle, and it goes to everywhere in your body except your lungs. It goes to your brain, goes to all your muscles, goes to your digestive tract. Pulmonary circulation, on the other hand, comes from the right side of the heart, and it goes just to your lungs, but nowhere else in your body. Nowhere else, just your lungs. Pulmonary means lungs. So name the blood vessels with which connect the heart for each circulation. Okay, how about for systemic circulation? The left side of the heart, namely the left ventricle, pumps blood into the aorta that goes into capillaries, and it comes back some veins that we call vena cava. The vena cava are the veins. And that's what it means. Vena cava just means big cavernous vein. Cavernous vein. That's the systemic circulation. The pulmonary circulation starts with the right ventricle, pumping blood into the pulmonary artery, not the aorta this time, but the pulmonary artery, through capillaries in the lungs, and then blood comes back from the lungs via the pulmonary veins. Pulmonary veins. Okay, be able to trace a drop of blood from the superior or inferior vena cava through both sides of the heart, both circulations, while noting the names of the chambers and valves it passes. Whoa. Maybe I'll do it real quick. Uh-oh. I think I kicked the plug. I wrecked the socket. Okay, starting where? Trace a drop of blood. Vena cava. Vena cava. Vena cava. What kind of blood does it want to know? No, it doesn't want to know if it's deoxygenated or oxygenated. Okay, vena cava. Vena cava goes to the right atrium. Okay, right atrium. It's going to go into the right ventricle, but I'm going to leave a space right here. Right ventricle. What's between the right atrium and right ventricle? There's a semilunar valve, namely... What did I say? No, it's not a semilunar valve at all. It's an atrioventricular valve, right? Yeah, thank you for catching that. Atrioventricular valve, namely the tri... cuspid is right there. All right, right ventricle into, you know, I'll say pulmonary, but I'm going to leave a space right here. Pulmonary artery or trunk / trunk, because it's a really big artery, so sometimes they just call it a trunk instead of an artery. But guess what? There's a valve between the ventricle and the pulmonary artery, which is a semilunar valve. All right, and because it goes into the pulmonary artery, we call it the pulmonary semilunar valve. All right, so now where does it go? It goes to the lungs, right? So maybe I'll just put lungs right here. And it comes back to the heart via pulmonary veins. Pulmonary veins. Okay. So then I'm going to start back up over here again. Now, where in the heart does it go? Into the left atrium. Okay. Left atrium, I'm going to leave a space again. The left atrium pumps blood into the left ventricle. Left ventricle, but it's got to pass by what? A valve, and it's a atrioventricular valve. It's an AV valve, right? And that AV, what's the name of that AV valve? Bicuspid. And it's got another name. Mitral valve, the same. All right, then the left ventricle pumps blood into the, I'm going to leave a space, aorta. But there's a valve, because we don't want blood going back. And the name of that valve is the, yeah, it's a semilunar, aortic semilunar valve. And then this goes to your systemic capillaries. And then it comes back to the heart eventually to where? Vena cava again, and that's where we started, and hooray, we're done. All right, now what happens in these capillaries right here? Exchange. And what happens in these lung capillaries? Exchange. Because they're capillaries. All right, I think that's that question. Know what vessels and chambers contain... Oh, here's that question I was looking to see if I had it. Which one contain oxygenated or deoxygenated blood? Okay, vena cava. Yeah, because it's coming back from your systemic capillaries. The systemic capillaries do what? Yeah, O2 goes out, CO2 goes in. So that's deoxygenated. So vena cava here. How about if I just put O2 or CO2? Okay, so for vena cava, we're going to say CO2 is deoxygenated. Right atrium, deoxygenated. Tricuspid, deoxygenated. Right ventricle, deoxygenated. Pulmonary semilunar valve, deoxygenated. Pulmonary artery, tricky, tricky, tricky. Even though it's an artery, it contains what? CO2. It's deoxygenated blood. And then in the lung capillaries, what do we got? We got exchange again. CO2 goes out and O2 goes in. So now in the pulmonary veins, what do we got? Oxygenated blood. Oxygenated blood, even though it's a vein. Left atrium, oxygen, bicuspid valve, oxygen. Oxygen everywhere right here because exchange cannot take place. Oxygen. What about aorta? It's carrying oxygenated blood. Systemic capillaries, again, that oxygen now goes out and CO2 goes in, so that's exchange taking place. So that's it, kind of in a nutshell, everywhere. Okay. What's the definition of an artery? Takes blood away from the heart. And a vein brings blood back to the heart. Does it matter if it has oxygen or carbon dioxide? Right? It's only the direction of blood flow. Okay. What vessel has the highest blood pressure? Artery. Yeah, like aorta is a good artery. Which has the lowest? Vein. Yeah, don't say capillary. What's the normal pacemaker of the heart? Where is it located? The SA node, and it is in the... it regulates the heart, but what chamber is it in? What part of the heart? It's in the right atrium. It's in the right atrium. That's where the pacemaker is. Okay. Which chambers of the heart contract first? Or do they all contract at the same time? Okay, where's that pacemaker at? It's in the atrium. So you know what? The atria contract first. And then, a little bit of time after that, the ventricle contract. Okay, so atria first, then ventricles. All right, now here's something about an EKG or an ECG. What does the P wave of the EKG represent? It represents atrial depolarization. Atrial depolarization, and that's a signal for contraction, but it's not really contraction. So the P wave, what does the P wave signal the heart to do? It signals the heart to contract. But the P wave is not really contraction all by itself. It's just a signal to start contraction. All right, what does the QRS complex of the EKG represent? Yeah, not the atria depolarizing, but the ventricles. And it happens at a later time. And that's a signal for what? The ventricles to contract. So the atria contract first and then the ventricles. All right, make sure you know where that SA node is and the AV node so you can label that diagram. Oh, only a couple more questions. Where are the following arteries located? Ascending aorta, that's right above the heart, then the arch, the descending aorta, brachiocephalic, we talked about that, the common carotid, subclavian. Where's the axillary at? Armpit, brachial. In your arm. Okay, radial and ulnar, that's easy. Iliac, where's the iliac? All the way at the bottom of the aorta where it bifurcates to go to your two limbs, that's the iliac. And then the femoral is in your, what do you call that between your hip and your knee? Yeah, that's the bone. So we call it femoral for femoral. Okay, that's your femoral artery. Let's do number 9. What's the baroreceptor reflex? What does it do? Baroreceptor. We didn't talk about that today. We talked about that last time. It regulates blood pressure. Yes. It's the most important mechanism for regulating short-term blood pressure. Like when you stand up from sitting down so you don't pass out. Okay, it's a baroreceptor reflex. Now, what about divisions of the nervous system that innervate the heart? Maybe I didn't talk about that. But I could by erasing this real quick. I should do that. Okay, so there you got your heart. And you have autonomic nervous system. What can you tell me about your autonomic nervous system? It's got 2 divisions, and it controls things automatically to where you don't have to think about them, right? So it's just an automatic control system you don't have to consciously think about. What are the 2 divisions of the autonomic nervous system? Yeah, I like parasympathetic. And the other one is sympathetic. Sympathetic. And what can you tell me about the relationship between these 2 different divisions? They're always antagonistic to each other. I've never found a circumstance where they produce the same kind of effect. They always produce opposite effects. And of course, you should realize that's a wonderful thing, right? Antagonism is good in terms of a control system because it gives you precise control and balance. All right, so here is the parasympathetic nervous system going to the heart, and here's the sympathetic nervous system to the heart. Let me see what the question says. Which divisions of the nervous system innervate the heart? Autonomic, sympathetic, parasympathetic. What is the effect of each of these divisions? Well, we said they're antagonistic. So the parasympathetic comes down the vagus nerve. That's cranial nerve number 10. And when this nerve stimulates the heart, it decreases heart rate. Decreases heart rate. So stimulation of the vagus nerve, or cranial nerve number 10, slows your heart down. Okay? Decreases heart rate. Sympathetic stimulation, on the other hand, I'm not going to tell you the nerves or anything involved with that, will increase heart rate, right? Because they're antagonistic to each other. So when your heart is racing, what nerves are being stimulated? Sympathetic. Yeah, and when you're relaxed, about ready to fall asleep, what nerves stimulate the heart? Parasympathetic. Okay? Okay. The sympathetic also increase force of contraction. And probably you've been really scared at some point in your life, maybe driving down the 5 freeway or something, all of a sudden a big accident happens in front of you or somebody cuts you off. And as you look at this thing happening in front of you, it looks like there's no way you can avoid an accident. You're going to be crashing into somebody. And then at the last second, you somehow avoid the accident. How are you feeling? How's your heart pounding? Is it slow or is it fast? It's super fast. That's one thing. But how else is it behaving? It's beating very strong. It's like pounding right outside your chest, right? So sympathetic not only increases heart rate, but it also increases the force at which it contracts. Okay. All right, so that's it for cardiovascular system. Wow, I thought that was going to last all semester long. Okay, so does anybody have a question? I think I'm not going to lecture on lymphatic tissue right now. We're going to get some points instead, like take a quiz. So does anybody have a question over everything? I think we covered what's on the quiz pretty well. All right, I'm going to turn this off. Yeah, question in the back. Number four? Let's take a look. Number four says, what is the systemic circulation and the pulmonary circulation? Yeah. You know, I probably want to show you this diagram again. All right, so here you have a heart. And this is the right side of the heart over here. Here's the left side of the heart. The right side of the heart pumps blood to your lungs to pick up oxygen. That's what we call the pulmonary circulation. So pulmonary circulation comes from the right side of your heart, goes to the lungs, and comes back. And what's the job of the pulmonary circulation? It is to pick up oxygen and to get rid of CO2. Right? As opposed to the systemic circulation, which comes from the left side of the heart. It goes out the aorta to everywhere in your body. And there, oxygen is released from the blood, CO2 is picked up. So the systemic circulation is supplying nutrients and oxygen to your body. Okay, and then that comes back to your heart and then eventually back to the pulmonary circulation. So you have two circulations, one to the lungs and one to everywhere else in the body. And I don't know, can you see this little person that we have right here? You see that she is shaded in everywhere in her body except her lungs? That's systemic circulation, everywhere in the body. But over here, the person's only her lungs are shaded in. That means pulmonary circulation. And so the systemic and pulmonary circulation come from different sides of the heart. How's that? Okay. And that makes the whole circulation up. Okay. Another question? I didn't notice that shading on the diagram, but that's handy to see that. Okay.